From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, June 26, 2026. Legal advocates in Maine say hundreds of immigrants in the state could now face deportation after the Supreme Court this week cleared the way for President Trump to end protections for Haitians and Syrians. Lisa Paricio with the Portland-based Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project says revoking temporary protected status, or TPS, is part of the administration's broader attack on legal immigration pathways.
Going after people who have existing statuses, like TPS holders, and seeking to strip them of their protections so that they can increase the numbers of people that they are able to deport.
There are more than 700 TPS holders in Maine, according to data from the Congressional Research Service. Maine municipalities issued about 7,500 permits for housing last year. That's according to new data released by the state today. That's about 9% above Maine's goal for the year, according to state officials. The permit data, collected for the first time from nearly 200 municipalities representing about three-quarters of the state's population, offer the clearest picture to date of how much housing Maine is building. Democratic Representative Tracy Geer co-chairs the legislature's housing committee. She says the numbers are encouraging, even as Maine needs to increase housing construction to meet statewide goals.
Having achieved the goal in year one, it really shows that it is doable, you know, for communities.
Construction was primarily concentrated in southern Maine, where Portland, Biddeford, and Lewiston issued the most permits. Union members from across Maine today agreed on a platform to address the rising cost of living and threats posed by AI. At a convention in Auburn hosted by the Maine AFL-CIO, nurses, factory workers, and tradespeople weighed in on an agenda that calls for implementing AI guardrails to protect workers and require data centers to pay for power grid upgrades. Cynthia Finney is president of the Maine AFL-CIO.
It should be enhancing people's jobs. It should not be replacing people's jobs. It should be used to enhance and strengthen the kinds of things that people can put out in the world, not narrowing them and casting people aside.
The unions also voted to endorse political candidates in Maine's major races this fall. Finney says those endorsements will be announced in the coming weeks. Two technical climbers stranded on Mount Katahdin Wednesday due to severe storms were rescued early Thursday by a Maine Army National Guard helicopter team. Carol Bousquet reports.
According to Baxter State Park officials, 35-year-old climbers Dylan Cunningham and Sean Rowan of Virginia were on Mount Katahdin's Flatiron Wednesday when severe thunderstorms rolled through Baxter State Park. The pair were stranded on the rough terrain, and exposure to the elements left both men hypothermic and dehydrated. Park rangers received a 911 call Wednesday afternoon and alerted the Maine Air National Guard, which dispatched a Black Hawk helicopter crew from Bangor. The rescue was delayed until Thursday morning due to heavy cloud cover. The men were taken to Millinocket Regional Hospital for evaluation. Citing privacy requirements, hospital officials would not comment on the condition of the two climbers. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
And now it's time for Maine's Political Pulse, our regular analysis of state government and politics. I'm joined today by Maine Public Statehouse correspondent Kevin Miller. Our colleague Steve Missler is off this week, but Bangor Daily News politics editor Mike Shepard has agreed to share his insights on this election season. So it's been a week since we finally learned who will be on the ballot this fall for governor. Kevin, let's start there. Has the political dust settled since those ranked choice runoffs? And if so, how are you seeing that race shaping up?
Yeah, so it's interesting. The Democratic leadership and the other candidates really coalesced very quickly behind Hannah Pingree. On the Republican side, it was a little bit different of a scenario. That was a much more kind of bare-knuckle fight between the candidates. And the other candidates on the ballot did not coalesce nearly as much around Bobby Charles, at least not initially. We'll see kind of what happens as this goes forward. Certainly the party leadership and a lot of the legislative leaders have kind of gotten behind Bobby Charles. And now looking ahead to November, you know, it's going to be an interesting matchup. Bobby Charles ran a very dark campaign, I'd say. He talked a lot about problems in Maine, corruption, crime, you know, needles in parks, problems with immigration. Hannah Pingree, she's been part of the Mills administration for a number of years, so she's kind of part of that establishment. She says she's going to run a much more positive campaign. So we'll see how things shake out.
And Mike, you've got a really interesting story out today about how close the ranked choice runoffs were and how if even just a few hundred voters had ranked candidates differently, we would have different nominees. Tell us more about what you found in your analysis.
Yeah, thanks, Ari. What struck me most is just how razor thin these margins were beneath the surface. We know that the first rounds of both the Democratic primaries were really close, but then you saw Pingree win the governor's race by nearly 25,000 votes in that final round. So that sounds like a landslide, right? But we got to look at all the ranked choice ballots for the first time this week. They were all posted on the Secretary of State's website in a series of Excel files. And it ended up being that the whole trajectory of that race hinged on just 274 voters. Basically, if that many more of Angus King III's first round supporters had ranked Shenna Bellows next instead of Troy Jackson, she would have leapfrogged Jackson, then eliminated Pingree and beaten Nirav Shah in the end. So she could have fairly easily won instead.
And of course, we have to mention that voters will have a third choice for governor again this year. Independent Rick Bennett has qualified for the ballot and has been campaigning around the state. Kevin, is Bennett a serious contender this year?
Well, I think he has to be taken seriously, and it seems like the parties certainly are. He's been around politics for decades now. He is a former Republican. He was actually the chairman of the Maine Republican Party during Trump's first term. He withdrew from the party and is now running as an independent, and I'd say he's definitely a more moderate candidate than Bobby Charles. So the Democrats are saying, no, he's a Republican. The Republicans are saying, no, he's a Democrat. But again, we don't have ranked choice voting for the governor in the general election. It's easy to forget that because we just came out of a ranked choice primary for the governor. And we've seen over and over again with Governor LePage, with Governor Baldacci, that it's possible to win in Maine without winning a majority.
Matt Dunlap won the Democratic primary in the 2nd congressional district and will now face former Republican Governor Paul LePage in November. Mike, what is your take on this matchup between LePage and Dunlap?
Yeah, just to start, this is a Republican district, I think at this point, that has been won three times by President Trump. Jared Golden hung on to it several times by winning over a decisive amount of Trump voters. We think that was roughly 1 in 10 in recent elections. So without Golden, I think LePage enters as a reasonably clear favorite. National Democrats certainly thought Joe Baldacci was their best matchup for him. Dunlap ran to his left. But I will warn that we also have kind of a clashing midterm effect right now with Trump and Republicans looking pretty widely unpopular. So if Dunlap wins, I think it's largely environmental, and we'd be waking up after Election Day to a pretty horrible outcome for Republicans nationally. So I'd put the race in LePage's column for the moment, but everything can change.
It seems like this race, you know, is frequently on the national radar. It is again this year because historically it's been a swing district. Kevin, do you think that's still the case this year? Is it still competitive?
Yeah, I think it is. Right now, the Democrats are saying, yes, this is still a high priority for them. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, which is the campaign arm of the National Democrats, as well as the Democratic National Committee, they're saying they support Matt Dunlap. But the DCCC backed Joe Baldacci during the primary, and it took them a couple days to even come out and mention Matt Dunlap by name after the primary results. So the question is, how invested are they going to be in this race? They haven't added him to this key group that they call Red to Blue, which are their official top priority campaigns.
Yeah, just to add to that, I agree with Kevin. I mean, I've covered every one of these congressional district races since 2012, and this has been a pretty constant competitive seat in the country. I'd say it's usually in the top 20 at the very least. I'd now peg it probably in the top 50 for what it's worth. The Cook Political Report has it in likely Republican territory right now. I think Dunlap basically has the summer to prove he's viable. If he doesn't, there won't be a ton of national investment here by the Democrats.
And that was Mike Shepard, politics editor at the Bangor Daily News, along with Maine Public Statehouse correspondent Kevin Miller. You can find a longer version of this conversation online at mainepublic.org/pulse, where you can also sign up for the Political Pulse newsletter. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.